David Holmgren, thanks very much for stopping your progress to Canberra, but there are sometimes more important things than national meetings on permaculture.
Yes, coming to Adelaide.
Yes, well, why not? It's been, well, I was just going to say decades, which it is, since you were one of the people springing permaculture on the world. Now you're changing the scale of the focus to almost the suburban backyard.
Yeah, well, I suppose in a lot of ways the permaculture movement really began in the suburbs of Australia. I think most significant part of that that I know the story of was in the suburbs of Melbourne, really, in the late 70s. Of course, Permaculture One was published in 1978, and the concept and mine, Bill Mawson's work, came out of Tasmania. But people often associate it with the Back to the Land movement, and that became a strong and persistent aspect and part of permaculture. But the real popularisation of permaculture, which happened, you know, very strongly in those years, especially due to the, you know, the charismatic character of Bill Mollison, but, you know, through connection through mainstream media, was really in the suburbs. And so, you know, that's there's a lineage and connection there of that's where the majority of Australians live. And it's also where an even greater proportion of children are raised who will face a world radically changed by climate change and other factors over the coming decades.
Well, the principles may not have changed, they may have developed a bit, but I must say I still have in my brain this picture of a gently sloping bog with trees up the top and ducks down the bottom. And how does that get adapted so much into suburban life?
Yeah, well, I suppose the new book, Retro Suburbia, A Downshifter's Guide to a Resilient Future, for a start, is focused in three broad fields: how we retrofit the built environment of houses and infrastructure and energy systems, and then the biological, the garden, the thing people most strongly associate with permaculture, and then lastly, the behavioural field, how we live, how we organise ourselves, how we share house or what we, the way we organise our lives is a key factor in that retrofitting and adapting to a changing world, and also how to live life better now. But in a sense of what that looks like on a suburban block, it's often very intensive vegetable garden systems, selected, sometimes multi-grafted fruit and nut trees, and yes, small livestock, you know, typically chooks, it could be ducks, guinea pigs mowing the lawn. But even these days, you know, the backyard goat. Now, of course, the goat can't be sustained off what you, the biomass you produce in a backyard, but there's a huge amount of biomass in the suburbs, which is all very good goat fodder that can be gathered from public land and wild spaces. So, you know, there's a whole lot of techniques and strategies and patterns that have now been, if not very widely adopted, have been quite well tested by a smaller cohort of people who've, you know, pursued that self-reliance at home in the suburbs.
But I guess in a couple of different directions, like the idea of goat husbandry in suburban backyards may not be revolutionary, but I can imagine more than one council officer having the collie wobbles about it.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. One of the case studies in the book, a place called Ecoburbia in Fremantle in Western Australia, in quite an upmarket, very affluent area, they have goats in the backyard. And, you know, there were some interesting discussions and very substantial engagement with the council about that, that was followed from 2 objections to the goats by neighbours and 30 supporters in the immediate surrounding streets saying it was a great idea. And it was interesting that the council didn't have a process for how to respond to approvals of things as opposed to opposition. So, of course, the issue of regulation is a very significant and serious issue for a lot of people. And in Retro Suburbia, I am very open about people gaining the social license for what they are doing, not primarily the legal license. Because if one is thinking about how does this affect others around me, the action is at a very small scale, and that those people directly affected are in agreement, then, you know, I suggest that if that's a progressive thing to do, then that social license is more important than the legal one.
So goat keeping in Suburbia 101 is first get yourself 29 colleagues.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. That social license is often more challenging and more rigorous process of approval than legal ones. And it brings us back to that Retro Suburbia is very focused at the household level, but it's about building the community connections at the neighbourhood level. And that includes relationships to people who might not see things in terms of, you know, the usual environmental progressive things about doing something to minimise greenhouse gas emissions. It might be relating to people who are just, you know, want to live a better life now and want to be able to do more things for themselves and don't want the government telling them what to do all the time. So Retro Suburbia can actually appeal in the lineage that permaculture has over the decades to people of all sorts of different dispositions.
Yes, I find it interesting, without getting too parish pump about it, that in my local area, the council bestirred itself some time ago to plant some fruit trees in a public park and things like that, but they also have a building code, or, yeah, I guess you call it a building code, which sees a standard block next door to me. This is not a whinge, by the way, but it's just an observation, where two houses are fitted in the space that one used to, but entirely without any environmentally smart features, like there are no verandas and no shade trees, etc., etc. So a lot of local government seems to go in contradictory directions.
Yeah, and that's a very strong pattern, where there's aspects of this sort of sensible self-reliance agenda, which is right in line with policies to improve health, reduce obesity, increase community connection, reduce greenhouse gas emissions, all sorts of different sustainability and socially related policies, and other policies which are really coming state government and federal government driven for infill development, maximum density that can be sort of effectively forced on populations that don't necessarily want those things for the purposes of maximum growth of GDP. And, yeah, in a lot of ways, local government is in the middle between what people might sort of want if left to their own devices and what our betters at the strategic level in state and federal government think is for our own good. So, you know, permaculture generally and Retro Suburbia is very much relating to directly people taking responsibilities for themselves, but the level of government where there's the greatest dialogue and partnership in this is definitely local government.
Yeah. Now, you're going to be in Adelaide soon.
Yeah, yeah. I'll be teaching, as I do, on the permaculture design course at the Food Forest, north of Adelaide, which I regard as perhaps the best permaculture demonstration site in the country, but also be doing a launch, an Adelaide launch of Retro Suburbia, which is being assisted by University of Central Queensland and their Adelaide campus and colleagues.
Mm. I like this idea of local launches. You can keep on launching wherever you go.
Yeah, well, actually, a lot of the presentations we're doing are, you know, not so much a launch, but it's a revival or a 2.0 version of my Aussie Street story, which is it's sort of like a permaculture soap opera of a street of four houses in a classic Australian suburb, taken from the 1950s through the affluence growth in the 60s and 70s, aging and infill in the 80s and 90s, the permaculture retrofit in the 2000s, and the Second Great Depression in the 2020s. And so it's a sort of a story of how that evolves and changes and really gives a much more positive spin on the way we can not just survive but thrive through the challenges that are definitely coming to Australia through, you know, a whole spectrum of forces of the global scale that we can't really avoid and we'll have to deal with in some way or another.
And like permaculture, it's nothing static. It's very much dynamic and organic.
Yeah, and I think my strategy for really pushing Retro Suburbia out to the next cohort of people, not necessarily the majority of Australian suburban dwellers, but instead of, you know, the 1% or the 0.5%, the 10% and the 20%, because those people who are motivated to make changes where they are, to be the early adopters, are providing a template, a pattern that others might need to follow in more difficult circumstances. And if there are living, working models at the street and the neighbourhood level, then we have a much better prospect of dealing with the challenges that are coming than if there's this sort of panic and hysteria about what do we do if energy costs really do rise? What do we do if natural disasters by climate change are actually accelerating at the rate they appear to be? What do we do if and when, as most commentators now accept, that the property bubble in Australia will burst at some stage sooner rather than later and will have, you know, catastrophic consequences for the Australian economy? How do we, go into that world with confidence and build better things?
Yeah.
And rather than that being fear-driven, a lot of people are making those changes now based on just working out this is a better way to live now, reducing debt, downsizing, sharing house, growing food, fixing and retrofitting the house, reducing the cost of living, and having more time at home in what we call the household and community non-monetary economy, rather than being on the mouse wheel of debt and high income and high expenditure.
All fundamental issues, not many of them appearing in that form on our political agendas these days.
No, well, it's very interesting that Retro Suburbia is actually addressing all of the big, tough issues that are constantly coming up. But it's not at that policy, this is what the country should be doing. It's through working with the people who want to make the changes themselves in their own lives. And we see that as the critical path for a larger positive change for society. So, you know, I mean, a lot of permaculture activists have laughed over the years of saying that permaculture is revolution disguised as gardening. Whether it's revolutionary or how much of it is just revisiting a whole lot of things that our grandparents took for granted. Yes, there are new and novel and experimental and even revolutionary elements to that, but a lot of it is just recreating the common sense that is no longer common.
Yep. Well, David, thank you very much for talking to us on Gastronaut. We look forward to seeing you over here soon.
That'll be good. Thank you.
Thank you.